Welcome to another episode of WHIM Radio. I'm your host for tonight, Peter. Joining me as almost always is JJ. So on a scale of worst night ever to best night ever, how is tonight?
It is best night ever.
Woo! All right, there we go. And joining us on WHIM Radio as almost never is my for sure co-host Jay. What's going on, Jay?
I'm sorry that I have now pushed the number of J's on this podcast to an odd number instead of an even number. I'll work on finding a way to add some so we can get back to an even number.
Yes, I will say that from time to time, my wife definitely does get confused with Jay and JJ.
She obviously knows
who each of you are separately, but
that's good.
Like, yeah.
I'm trying to imagine from her perspective being like, is he just calling like Jay by like a pet name now? Or is that actually just JJ?
Oh my gosh. All right. So since the last time we recorded, Detroit is 3-5-2. So not so good overall. Although in there, there's definitely been some good performances. Since we have 10 games since the last time we recorded, rather than kind of do a play-by-play recap or a game-by-game recap, we're going to do something a little bit different. So we're just going to talk about the season as a whole, and obviously we can focus on the recent stretch. But we're going to take a look at the biggest surprises for the Red Wings so far this season. So let's see. So JJ, I'm going to go to you first. I guess we can each start with one and see where we go from there.
All right, I'll start with the biggest positive surprise has been that Dennis Cholowski has been, like, he made the team out of camp. He looked really good, and he's continued to look really good. Like, I mean, the last stretch, he struggled a bit more, and he's apparently lost a bit of ice time. I'm guessing it's because of the struggles, but. Honestly, the kid has just fit right in, and it has. And that's kind of like brought up another surprise in terms of, like, we spent the last couple of seasons really lamenting the concept of the veteran defenders, and then, like, we lose Mike Green and everything falls apart. So I'm sneaking a secondary surprise on there, but I'm really happy with the way Cholowski has held himself up this season.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think, just from reading comments on our site and people tweeting about the Red Wings, that definitely does seem to be the biggest surprise. And, you know, from time to time, we're not able to see I guess it depends on where you live, but, you know, whenever we're playing like a national game and you're not hearing, you know, the normal Red Wings broadcast crew, a lot of times the national team, the national broadcast teams are focusing on Cholowski, and, you know, for good reason. So Jay, what's one, I guess we'll stick with positive surprise for now. So what's one or two, you can throw in a second one too.
It's the season of giving still. That's so nice.
Exactly. Well, I mean, there are 12 days of Christmas.
Yes, there are. You're very true. Okay. Yeah. So, positive surprise. Even though we are in the midst of the contractually obligated mid-December, early January injury to him, James Aloysius Howard, I am really, really impressed with his play. Historically, I've always really liked Jimmy Howard. It just stinks that there's these like clockwork things that happen to him. It's always a tweak to the knee, something with his back that happens at a crux moment of each season that he's played where it's just this lead balloon that just drags everything down. But even though it's happened again, I will say leading up to it happening, I forget who tweeted, but I think Cousins retweeted somebody saying that if Howard's on a different team, we're talking about Vezina right now. And I kind of have to agree. I think he's played pretty darn well given for just how, you know, not well this team is built. So, I mean, good for him. I'm excited to. I love competent goalies. I think he's a very competent goalie. I still think it's a pipe dream to see him hoist Stanley with this team. But there is a part of me that would like to see him go elsewhere and play with a team that's, you know, stacked a little bit better and see what he can do. I think he was handed, you know, one or two years of when this team was really, really, you know, competitive and could actually make some noise. But, you know, since he's just kind of had to deal with what he's had. So I really like what Jimmy Howard has done so far. I would love to see him come back and continue to do that. And then, you know, hey, if he stays, great. If he's gone, I still cheer him on. All the best. He is Jumbo Jimmy Licious. So.
Even more Jays.
I know, exactly.
<Yes. laughs> I'm already trying to make up for it subconsciously.
While you were talking, I was trying to find. Oh, that's what it was. I was looking at the wrong season. Jimmy Howard has played really well, and so for goalies, obviously there's you know, in the stats community, it's tough to quantify success for goalies, and it's certainly probably harder to predict future success for goalies. It seems like it's very, very rare for a goalie to be in the, you know, the top echelon for more than a couple seasons in a row. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so I mean, there's a couple stats that are definitely better than others, and one of them is quality starts, which is it's a start where their save percentage is greater than their average save percentage for the year, or at least 88.5% on nights with 20 or fewer shots against, right? Because obviously, you know, fewer shots against, it's harder to get a high save percentage if you let one in. And so Jimmy Howard, out of 24 games played, has 17 quality starts, and he is fourth in the league behind Frederik Andersen, John Gibson, and Devan Dubnyk, and ahead of Henrik Lundqvist. So, you know, he's definitely played really good, really well to start the year. And the other one I always like to look at is goals saved above average. And right now he is seventh in the league, behind some of those same goalies. So, you know, he's definitely been at or near the top of the league in, you know, some really good goalie metrics for a while this year. Those are definitely some really good positive surprises. I'm going to go with a player who's tailed off a little bit recently, but I'm looking at the season as a whole, and I am pleasantly surprised with Andreas Athanasiou this year. Like I said, he has definitely, I think, taken a little bit of a step back the last stretch of games, but I do think that there's a very likely chance that he's going to come back to where he was before. But yeah, for a while he was playing really, really well. He was doing all the things that we had wanted to see. You know, he was still able to use his speed to get past defenders and to create scoring chances. But in addition to that, he was doing kind of like what we saw the progression of Dylan Larkin, where Larkin used to just kind of fly into the zone and kind of do the same thing. And so now you'd see Athanasiou, rather than just, okay, I'm going to take the puck and just go straight to the goal. You know, if he had that, then he would do it, which is, I mean, a very good play. But if he didn't see that opportunity, he would pull up and look for the trailer. And, you know, he made some really nice passes to set up some plays early on in the season. So like I said, I mean, in the month of December, he's only had 4 points, and those are all assists. But, you know, goal scorers are streaky, and I think that we're going to see him, regain that form that he had earlier in the year. Because I mean, the biggest thing is that it seems like he definitely has his work ethic going. I know that was a big question in the past, is he going to be able to kind of put it all together? And I think he definitely has shown us that he can do that this year. All right. So those are some positive ones. So JJ, what's a negative surprise for you this year? For me, this is like a harder one.
Yeah, it kind of is. It's been a lot of like, because the stop up get is in the word surprise. Like, we knew that the Red Wings were going to struggle with consistency, and We like kind of expected, you know, Nick Cronwall to not be great, and like expected a lot of bad things. So every time something bad happens, it's like, ah, well, that's not a surprise. I will go out on a limb and risk losing the faith of all of our listeners and say I am actually honestly surprised at how disappointing Justin Abdelkader has been for me this season. I know like his contract has taken a lot of flack since he first signed it, and it was all like, I can't believe that. But my take on that contract was always like, I don't think he's going to live up to it for all 7 years, but I think he's got a good few years of being able to pull that off, and he just has not done enough of that. Like he wears an A, but he doesn't really do anything on the ice that shows that kind of leadership. Like he's been the same kind of a drag on his offensive line. And I can understand like the concept of a piano mover on a line with skill guys makes sense. And maybe I'm just being too hard on him because, you know, he's been playing with Larkin and Nyquist a lot, and Larkin and Nyquist are playing really well. So it's kind of hard to say that Justin Abdelkader is dragging them down, but it just seems like every time I notice him, he just pisses me off. Like, why is Anthony Mantha taking fights that are like, that's your job? You know, I see him like taking swings at pucks that are above his head. Like Brendan Smith used to do that all the time. And that was like, honestly, the most hilarious thing about watching Brendan Smith. But every time I see Abdelkader, I can't help but get around the concept of how would Tyler Bertuzzi have done it differently than Justin Abdelkader just did. And I can't get around the concept of, like, I just have to believe Tyler Bertuzzi would have done it better. So I don't know. Maybe I am just dumb and naive for thinking that Abdelkader would have been better. Maybe I'm just biased against him unfairly right now and he's doing better than I just think he is. But, yeah, he's my negative surprise.
Yeah, I got to go see the team play in Nassau Coliseum 2 Saturdays ago, and Abdelkader was noticeably bad. Obviously, you know, when you're watching a game live, it's a lot easier to, you know, to really focus on players, and that was one of the, you know, he's one of the players I wanted to focus on, you know, because we'd had these conversations like, is he really just that bad this year? And he, yeah, I mean, unfortunately, I think the answer is yes. He was, like I said, he was noticeably bad. There were times where he should have been doing things and he wasn't, and vice versa. So yeah, I'm definitely going to agree with that one. Jay, what about you? What's your negative surprise?
Dan freaking Bylsma.
Okay.
This guy's been completely invisible. I don't know if we talked about this on For Sure, but maybe we talked about it a little bit, but I thought he was going to be like this sneaky, underrated money acquisition in the offseason to have just some sort of noticeable impact on just, and maybe I've completely missed it because I've obviously worked for a company that covers the games all the time, and maybe I'm focusing more on the play of the team rather than maybe what the coaches are necessarily exactly in charge of. But I don't know. I feel like there's, you know, for a guy who just completely stabbed every single Red Wings fan in the heart in 2009, you would have thought he'd be finding a way to just make up for that by now. Either tangibly or intangibly. And I just only one of the guys I think on the bench has hair. So the bald compendium, the bald Illuminati is squarely in place. But I don't know. Correct me if I'm wrong. Wasn't he kind of power play oriented largely?
Yeah, but I mean the Red Wings power play is a lot better this year than it was last year.
Well, yeah, but you know, I will say that it'd be nice to, you know, I don't know. I guess. Maybe it's an irrational thing. You know, maybe this is Jay is disappointed because, you know, it's like Futurama said, when you do things right, people won't be sure whether you've done anything at all. So, yes, I will admit that the power play is better, but maybe this is more of a joke negative surprise because, like I said, he stabbed every one of us in the heart. What, like, what else can I expect from you here? So, I don't know. My joke other pick for what Bilesma was supposed to do was, you know, we're that 9-game stretch at the beginning of the season. Blashill just is, you know, hey, how is that hot seat coming, buddy? And then he's gone. Bilesma takes the reins, and then all of a sudden, everything is bright and shiny. But obviously, that was a dumb thing to think. For as up and down the team has been, yes, I will admit that, you know, most assuredly his power play tutelage has improved us, but maybe I'm just being selfish and wanting more.
So. Yeah, I mean, obviously the only person he didn't stab in the heart was Jon Bon Jovi because he was shot through the heart. But okay, so negative.
Jeez, you're waiting for me to just keep.
Oh yeah, I've been waiting like 2 minutes,
5 minutes on basically a nothing pick. Now that I think about it, and you were just like sitting on that. So you're welcome. I just served you up for a Bon Jovi pick.
Yeah, you had so it to know it was coming out of New Jersey too.
Yeah, exactly. I did.
All right, yeah, so for me, negative, man, like I have ideas. The only thing that I'm just a little hesitant about is it's things that I've talked about, I think, last episode, if not you know, maybe a little bit further in the past. But for me, I mean, he's turned it around. Actually, it's kind of a mirror image of the first one for me, because Athanasiou started off really well and he's kind of tailed off. You know, Franz Nielsen, I was just very surprised at how bad he played the beginning of the year. He's definitely he's come a long way, and he's a lot closer to what we expected. And then the other one that I've talked about before again is Trevor Daley. It's tough because I like him. You know, I mean, like, obviously we like most, if not all the players in some way, but you know, he seems like a really,
we like our team.
No,
we
yeah. Like you know what I mean? Like he seems like a really likable guy. The other night, I think Toronto did a really class act where he was playing in his 1000th game, and they did a, you know, during the first commercial TV timeout, they did a, like a little tribute to him. And I thought that was really, really classy. And, you know, he seems like a really good guy. And, you know, he's played really well in the past. But, man, I mean, he just looks really bad this year. Like, worse than last year. I mean, last year he didn't look great. And, you know, last year I was disappointed in how he played compared to what I was hoping for. And this year he just looks just worse.
Yeah, a lot of poke and hope and clears to nowhere on out of him. Like the Cronwell clear that cost the Red Wings the lead against Toronto has been like Trevor Daley's entire season so far.
I have to agree. That was one of those weird things where you see it happening and it's, you're like, oh, okay. Oh, I didn't want to rewind and live this again, but here we are.
Yeah, I mean, like it's, some of these plays, it's almost like he's forgotten like where he's supposed to be. You know, somebody like Cronwall, even though he's not nearly as mobile as he used to be, he still knows what to do and he knows where, you know, positioning and stuff like that. And obviously Trevor Daley knows positioning. I mean, I know he knows it, but you wouldn't know it by watching him sometimes. Like sometimes he just seems to be in a place where he shouldn't be, or he's really slow to react to a play when you would assume that, okay, maybe he's lost a step, but not that much. You know, it shouldn't be that much. Like I said, the last stretch for Detroit has not been terribly good, although there have been some bright spots. So as the you know, as December finishes up and we go into January, it'll be interesting to see out of our, I guess, seven surprises so far, if any of them turn around in the next little while. So we're going to talk a little bit about a rumor. So this is always fun because we don't know. You know, we're speculating on something that is it's itself kind of a speculation. So there are rumors of a third jersey for Detroit next year. This is coming from the Jersey Watch. What is it? Jersey Watch 2019 from Aesthetics. And apparently they have a list of teams that are going to have third jerseys next year. And Detroit is on it. So this is going to be interesting. Number one, obviously, if it happens, but if it does, it's going to be interesting because unlike some of these other teams, there's so much history in this, you know, in the jersey design, that a misstep here is going to be probably multiplied, you know, far more than if it was another team. So, Jay, I'm gonna, as our resident jersey aficionado, I'm gonna throw to you first, and then JJ and I can come in and you know, clean up if there's anything we think you missed. But I'm pretty sure you're probably gonna have a comprehensive look at this.
Well, I apologize in advance if anybody heard me drooling, because I was really excited that we get to talk about this. And you know, Pete and I are on our, like, we just recorded a podcast and we didn't really talk about this, and then this happens. It's like, oh, I don't really want to wait 2 weeks to talk about this. So first of all, thank you for allowing me to grace the other lovely program here at the Winged Motown Radio Network. Hearing about this rumor, I was I'm perplexed, because you'd think that even after all this time and how long they've stayed pretty much center with what their look is, it's been obviously those very special occasions of outdoor games where the Wings have worn something that is not historically or just like kind of an offshoot of what they've already done. So the idea of a third jersey for the Red Wings has always been fascinating to me, because I personally, and again, this is just me, I know there could be a lot of very, very, very pure the Winged Wheel and that's it. But for me, I always felt that there was a good third jersey for the Wings out there. I was thinking mostly just because of the law of averages, like at some point, one really, really good third jersey could exist, and there could be some fun made out of it and actually have it welcomed. So, you know, the rumor that this came out there, I'm just beyond intrigued. I don't know which direction they would go. I mean, if there was one suggestion that I really want our third jersey to be, it would just be a variation on the home whites, which is what I keep hoping for any freaking time. Cause I thought the Centennial jerseys were pretty cool for the Centennial game against Toronto. You know, I feel like the thin stripe instead of the thick stripes is kind of, you know, it's not really something the Wings have ever worn, but it was neat because they put the years that they won the cup on there. So, all right, that's cool. And then the Winged Wheel was actually like kind of they used silver thread to emboss the logo, which looked pretty stupid cool too. So like it's not bad. It's just, if we're just talking about a straight third jersey, there's a picture out there. So for Pete and JJ, you guys can look for it, and then everybody listening, you guys can look for it. There's an old picture of Gordie Howe, and it's one of those like he's skating at the camera, and they make you do like you're gonna put snow on the goalie type T-stop skate thing, and it's an old Red Wing sweater. Where so just take the home, just take the away white jerseys for the Wings right now, but just invert the colors on the sleeve. So instead of it being a red sleeve with a white stripe, it's a white sleeve with a red stripe. And then just everything else is just a really simple, smaller, you know, not as intricate Winged Wheel on it. And I think that could be cool. I'm scared it's just going to, they're just going to be like, hey, you know, that digital six for NHL 19, that's what we're going with. So congratulations. And then I jump off of a cliff. So hopefully that's not what happens, but that's, as we said, since it's a rumor, there's not really more that I can say about it. There's only what I wish it could be. And, you know, if they do it, I mean, that's obviously going to be a huge break from tradition. Cause I mean, since Illich's took over, and really since Norris took over as well, there's, you know, I think the only thing that's changed is just the physical orientation of the wheel, because there are some where like the wing is like kind of like basically the logo is kind of rotated. So like the wing is kind of pointing down instead of just straight across. And, you know, that's kind of the way it was on the outside of the old Olympia. So other than that, they just played straight Johnny for 50, 60 years now. So, you know, if it's actually something that looks cool, I'm all for it. But you're right, Pete, you already said it. To screw it up would be just like this thing is, nope, we're never doing this. We're never doing this again. You don't mess with perfection unless you're the Blackhawks, because you're finally granted that one outdoor game you've really been hoping for. And then you get finally another outdoor jersey. I'm just waiting for the Blackhawks to just one time. It's I'm just envisioning it's all the, like, they'll have every iteration of a jersey ever. Like, they'll one year they'll go out wearing Chicago Bulls themed Blackhawks jerseys. Like, hey, we're just honoring our heritage, right? Everything the Blackhawks have ever done. So
yeah,
so that's my take.
Yeah. So JJ, what are your thoughts about this jersey idea, the third jersey potential?
Well, conceptually, like, I've always been, because design wise, I don't really have a preference of what I think it should be. Like, I'll know whether I love it or I hate it when I see it. I can't tell you anything other than, like, I love their current jerseys so much that, like, okay, let's just do that. I'm totally cool doing that. The last few years, I've definitely grown out of the, like, because I was the curmudgeonly, don't mess with perfection. Third jerseys are just a stupid cash grab. And, you know, nowadays, I don't really mind the organization wanting to do that. Because as long as there's people willing to buy it and that want to do that and get excited about it, it just feels like that curmudgeonly side of me is just like, you know, shitting on things that other people love just because I don't love them. Mm. Like, I haven't disliked any of the alternate jerseys they've worn in the past. Like, I don't necessarily want to, like, add to my collection of jerseys just because it's an alternate design, but that is something that people get geeked about. So, cool. I'm going to make fun of whatever comes out just because that's just how I process everything. But, you know, go wild with it. Like, I don't know, like, add literal wings to the jersey. Let's do that. Somebody,
wait, you mean like Black Swan?
Yeah, like, somebody out there is gonna love it and gonna buy it, and I am more likely to buy the more outrageous, like, the stuff that's gonna get talked about forever, like the Blues ones that had the trumpets all over them.
Just the
more awful and garish it is, the more I'm going to embrace it, because that's where we are in the end of 2018, and that's how I foresee all of 2019 going anyway. Just let me embrace the awful garish stuff. Let's get nuts.
Yeah, I mean,
that's a Michael Keaton shout out right there.
Yeah, I mean, I think. Actually, I was just thinking as you were talking, out of the five Red Wings jerseys I own, I think two of them are alternate designs. I have the, I think it's a 2013 one, the red one, like the more old school one. And then I have the white one with the kind of like the stylized D on it. So, yeah, I mean, obviously, as Jay and I talk very, very often, that compared to him, I don't care nearly as much about uniforms, other than just I'll be like, yeah, I like that, or nah, not really. But I mean, for me, like, I just really hope it's not like a black jersey, just because I, and granted, you never know, like, they might be able to do that and make it cool. I'm kind of over the black jersey, just as a whole, like, league wide. But yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where I'll wait until I see it. You know, first of all, obviously, I'll wait until I see if it's going to happen. But second of all, I'm going to wait until I see that it is happening and what it is, and then I'll go from there. I know that's not, you know, in our current world of hot takery, that's not a good. it's what, not really.
Why are you showing restraint?
I know.
Who the heck shows restraint?
It's not really good.
Do you
good
even
radio.
Know how to take, bro?
But all right. So sticking with the Red Wings, there are four prospects playing at the World Junior Tournament. It started today as we're recording this. If you're listening to it when it first comes out, we're talking about last night's games. And make sure to watch tonight as you're listening to it, because there's more games. There's more games tonight. So all four of the Red Wings prospects that are in the tournament were in action tonight. We got to see Filip Zadina play for the Czechs. And I got to watch, I didn't get to see all of that game, but I got to see a lot of it. And Zadina was very noticeable. He was probably, for me, from what I was able to see, he was probably second only to Nakash from Carolina at just kind of being a positive presence out on the ice. Early on in the game, the two of them played together, and then they got split up as the game went on, and they put them back together later. So the Czechs went on to win in overtime. Zadina, I know he didn't score any goals. I don't think he had any points, but he did have some really good plays. He had a couple shots where it seemed like it was gonna be a goal, but it didn't go in. And then also in three of them were playing in one game, so. For Canada, Joe Valeno is playing left wing instead of his normal center. But at the same time, when you see that roster, it's understandable why he's at least starting out there. Jared McIsaac was listed as the seventh defenseman today, but he ended up playing. There was a scary moment for Red Wings fans as he took a slap shot in the leg, and it looked pretty bad, but he was able to come back after going to the dressing room for a few minutes. And actually the slap shot was from the other Red Wings prospect, Setkoff, who is a defenseman for Denmark. And like I was telling JJ before we started recording, he is a mountain of a man. I had forgotten about him with all the hype about Valeno and Berggren and et cetera. I had obviously Zadina. I had forgotten about Setkoff, and I think if I heard him right, they said he's like 6'7", and it's weird because he's both enormous and he also looks like he's 12. So it was kind of a weird combination. It was almost like in The Waterboy, where he visualizes Henry Winkler's head as a baby. Or no, it was the other coach, yeah. Right? The other coach is a baby. Yeah. Oh, Henry Winkler. Yeah. Okay. I got it backwards. Henry Winkler envisions the other coach as a baby. And it kind of reminded me of that. So I guess, first of all, like were either of you able to watch any of it? We'll start there. And then if not, we can go somewhere else.
I saw some good reaction on the Twitters as I was at this hour. I was working at a National Basketball Association event. Downtown. But from what I saw, it you're right, Pete. Zadina was very much in the conversation with literally anything that was happening for the Czechs. So that's really good to see. This is the time of year where I'm really frustrated with cutting the cord on cable. I'm sure if and when I have time, I can find some sort of legal stream. somewhere to actually partake, because I don't know, for all the time that people talk about how, like, oh, they love college football or college basketball, I feel like this is the closest thing that hockey has to that type of feeling. But it feels always so short. I always find myself stupid busy around this time of year, and I'm only able to really pay attention, you know, towards the medal round and stuff. So, and not necessarily that's a bad thing, but, you know, especially with this, like you said, with four of our guys in the pipeline, you know, I would love to see what this is probably more of a chance for me to see more of Valeno, because I've heard a ton about how well he's doing. It's absurd that all of the things that Valeno is doing. And I'm actually thinking that's probably works out better for Zadina, because now everyone could probably just shift the conversation to how well Valeno's doing. And then Zadina can be like, ah, yes, no one sees me. I will do the things now. I will do the many things for which they earned me that pick by the Wings. So,
yeah. So
I just love World Juniors hockey. It's
yeah. Amazing. So you're saying he's going to fill the nets with goals, hopefully?
Yeah.
See? Yeah. I didn't want to say it. I wanted you guys to fill it out for me. I laid it on pretty thick there.
All right. Yeah. So JJ, what about you? First of all, were you able to see any? And you know, even if not, like, you know, what are your thoughts going into this tournament?
Yeah, sadly, I was not able to watch any of today's action, and I'd actually planned on it. Like, but yeah, it's this time of year. Just everything got so busy. We ended up spending time with the family, went out to the movies and dinner, and kind of missed everything. Like, I feel like, because I was going to go into it with the fervor of a Canadian watching the World Juniors and taking it like, oh, so seriously. But then, like, I kind of realized that, you know, McIsaac was the seventh D-man and Leno was stuck on the fourth line, and I had honestly forgotten entirely about Multisetkov. I was excited about Zadina, but I also knew that essentially what I was going to be able to watch was going to be like super Canadian favor heavy anyway. So instead, I've kind of become, instead of the Canadian watching with the fervor of the World Juniors being on, more like an American during Olympic basketball, where I'm tracking it, like I'm paying attention to what's going on, but yeah, kind of wake me when the medal round happens. So I don't know. I'll probably try to end up watching a little bit tomorrow. Although with the Red Wings playing, I'm not likely to be able to catch any of that anyway. But I will. I am definitely. My ears are more perked than they had been in previous years because there are more Red Wings in more important role, more Red Wings prospects in more important roles. I'm really looking forward to seeing, like, especially with Valeno, because I think that he almost kind of reminds me of like Dylan Larkin at the same age, where like, why isn't he getting a bigger opportunity by his coach? And then you see the rest of the roster, and it's kind of like, oh, yeah, I get that. But still, give him a better opportunity because I don't care. Just show me my guy.
Yeah. Yeah, like I said, it's like we were talking about before. It was 7-0 Canada. They go on a power play, and it's like still their first power play unit. You know, I was hoping to see Valeno on the power play at that point, but like, you know, he definitely got out there just because, you know, it's obviously not exactly the same as the NHL. So I was hunting around while we were recording, looking for some stats. But, you know, the game ended shortly before we started recording. So I haven't been able to find any like time on ice stats yet. But yeah, so the I forgot to say that the Canada-Denmark game finished 14-0. And
that's a two-score game in my
exactly. Yeah, and I will say my favorite part was watching people debate the merits of Pitbull on Twitter, because that it's the Canada goal song is "Don't Stop the Party" by Pitbull, and as Chris Peters wrote on Twitter, "I have heard 'Don't Stop the Party' 14 times tonight. I guess we're not adhering to the Geneva Convention here in Vancouver." So I thought that was pretty funny. And to be fair, any song 14 times is going to be pretty terrible. So like I said, if you're listening to this, you know, tomorrow as we record, then there's some hockey on tonight. But, you know, like JJ said, you're probably going to be watching the Penguins Red Wings game at 7:00. But I think there's a game that starts at 4:00. So you can probably still get to see a little bit of it. All right. So before we get to the around the league kind of storyline questions, Jay, you had an idea for tonight. So why don't you tell us about that?
Thank you, Peter. As we close out this wonderful calendar year, we are obviously close to the halfway point, but of this wing season. So it's important to obviously assign value in some form, in some fashion. So during our prep for this wonderful episode, I had this thought. It'd be kind of neat to kind of, you know, fans like to summarize their team season so far with either a limerick or a song, or heck, even an excerpt from their favorite Neil Gaiman novel. There's many things that fans like to do to sate their desire on how to put things in perspective. So given it's, you know, a couple days after Christmas now, we wanted to, I figured it'd be fun to try and summarize the Red Wings season so far, if it were the plot for a favorite, underrated, or classic Christmas film. So I was very excited to pitch this, and by the grace and love of Peter and JJ, they've agreed to go forward with it. So is it all right if I go first, or do you guys want to go? Okay. Yeah. I feel like I went maybe a little too deep on my pick for this thing, because there's a couple of different layers to it, like an onion. Shrek fans out there, I see you. The Nightmare Before Christmas is my pick to summarize this Red Wings season. But what's weird is it's not just about the season. Maybe it's summarizing this current era of Red Wings, as in we are in the Nightmare Before Christmas. And, you know, Christmas is the time of gifts and fun and laughter and love. But right now we kind of have to live through some of the worst things we ever thought could be imagining and happening. But secondly, I also liked it because when I immediately thought of it, I was able to come up with a couple of song lyrics. So to all those out there who are just really itching for to hear me sing poorly. So I was thinking, what's this? What's this? This power play is trash. What's this? What's this? Our defense looks like ass. What's this? What's this? Our forwards cannot score. What is this? So that was the driving force behind that one. So it's kind of a two-sided story. So you know, it's symbolic to what we're dealing with right now, but then also all of the weirdness that this season has brought us. And I'd like to think that also there's another layer to it, because, you know, in the movie, Jack Skellington was, you know, kind of dull with how things have been going on. I mean, Halloween world is every day. Right. But then you see something new, you see something, you want to try something new. So maybe the Red Wings have just been stuck in the success mode, that they needed a breath of fresh air of something, anything different than what they've been doing, to put things into perspective and then ultimately move on to better things. So that's my Christmas pick. I don't know if you guys came up with songs on your own, but I will be really sad if you didn't.
Well, prepare to be really sad.
I knew it.
Because I have chosen the Christmas classic, Home Alone.
Okay. Okay. Good.
So here's what I got. Now it kind of falls apart a little bit, which is not surprising when you're trying to, you know, fit an entire season storyline with a pre-existing movie. But so here's what I got. So in the beginning, the older people, in this case our defensemen, were unable to protect the younger people, leading to Shulak, Kronik, Hicketts, and Chalowski collectively playing the part of Kevin McAllister. Now, take that part and forget most of what I just said, because for the rest of it, we're just going to focus on Dennis Chalowski as Kevin. We're going to forget about the other ones. but then it turns out that even though he's young, he is more than capable at preventing the attacks on his home. And when the older people come home, they find that Kevin has proven himself independent. And to be honest, I kind of forget the end of the movie, so I don't know if that really lines up, but just go with it.
as someone who watched it as recently as last night, you pretty much nailed it. So
yeah.
So there you go.
Because, I mean, I just remember that they do it again, I think twice, right? There's three of them?
I think there's five. There are,
what?
They made the first two, and then they spun off.
God. Today I learned. Okay. Yeah. All right.
I'm sad to be the bearer of bad news.
Oh my god!
Yeah, it's not good.
All right, JJ, what do you got?
I'm so sorry. I could not come up with a song parody, but that was really good, Jay. I want to just pause to give you credit, especially that our defense looks like ass part was spot on and well delivered too. I feel we are at the point in the Die Hard is Christmas movie thing where that's becoming the is a hot dog a sandwich debate, and everybody's kind of getting tired of talking about it. I was going to pass on that. Then I really wanted to use Gremlins. Because Gremlins is a great Christmas movie. It's a horror movie. And also, like the Red Wings, it's something that not as many people are watching anymore. but really, for this season, and I have to shout out to my sister Ann from Kansas on this. It's got to be It's a Wonderful Life with Henrik Zetterberg playing George Bailey.
Oh.
Because that, like, it... It hurts, but it's so accurate. And Dylan Larkin is obviously Clarence because he's an angel. So that's, yeah, I mean, that's as deep as I feel we need to go and as deep as I really want to go.
Yeah.
to go deeper would be to to tempt the darker things among us. So,
all right, yeah. So, I mean, I think those are three good movies, and then three, you know, good approximations of the Red Wings season so far. So, before we get to the positivity corner, we're gonna do a little bit of storylines outside of Detroit. All right, Jay, you started off last time. So JJ, what storylines are you interested in right now outside of the Red
Wings? I wanted to bring up something you guys were talking about on the last episode of For Sure, which was gritty. And it really got me thinking, because I had to scrub my brain from the concept of gritty being a mammalian live birth that Caitlin Dividock brought up. Which still disturbs and haunts me, but it goes along with the concept of, like, I want to just embrace the grotesque and horrifyingness. And that's, like, really what the positivity of Gritty was. And it got me thinking that what Gritty really is he's the Chitauri John Scott. And it's the weirdest thing I could think of, but bear with me for a minute. I swear I actually have a point here. The John Scott story was amazing and natural, and it was amazing because there was, like, an earnestness to it. Like, it was like a good guy who is really a monster, but means well. But with the Chitauri, and I'll take it to the Avengers movie, you know, the Chitauri attacked New York, caused billions of dollars in damage, and the entire time that they are blowing up cars and tearing down buildings and terrorizing citizens inside of banks, you never see a single person die. But when the Avengers fight back, the Chitauri get slaughtered en masse, and that's totally okay, because they're not real people. They look like people. They're humanoid. But you can kill as many of those as you need to, and you don't have to worry about an R rating. You don't have to worry about there being a backstory. You don't have to worry about, that Chitauri chariot driver guy had a family. Nobody gives a shit about that lizard-faced idiot. That's Gritty. In John Scott, because John Scott, as a person, has troublesome baggage that we had to worry about. And the entire John Scott to the All-Star Game story was he's a nice guy, and he's this earnest guy, and he's really likable, but also there was the time he chased down Phil Kessel just to be a jerk. And, like, he has been, like, part of goon culture, and continues to be part of goon culture, that we've got this problem with. So Gritty allows us to have that, like, that big lovable monster without the actual real baggage. And I think that's the secret to Gritty's success. And I'm really enjoying that this year.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, having Caitlin on, where we talked about, you know, I won't repeat it, but the detail that still haunts you to this day, you know, several days later. I thought, like, the thing that stuck with me was she pointed out just how good of a skater Gritty is.
That's true. Which too, is, yeah.
Exactly. I mean, like, you know, it can't be easy to skate in that giant suit. And, you know, Gritty, like, I don't know. I'm still not tired. Maybe in a couple months you can ask me again. I am still not tired of watching Gritty chase people down and attack them. Like, it just, because, like you said, it's kind of like, you know, he's not going to really hurt them. It's just a show. But it's just like, in the beginning, I think the thing that bothered me the most was the eyes. I thought that was the weirdest part. And I think as it's gone on, whoever came up with that idea is, I want to tip my hat to them, because now that's kind of the thing that makes me love Gritty. like the expressions that those eyes make when he's doing these crazy things, you know, and I think like, I honestly do think if you change the eyes, I'm not saying it still wouldn't be interesting, but I do think it would lose at least a little bit of the, you know, the fun. So I'm going to jump in and do a storyline I'm interested in. And it's hard for me as a Red Wings fan to point this out, but I kind of feel like I have to. Is I don't know if Tampa Bay is going to lose again. I mean, obviously, you know, they've been,
this is a problem.
No, I mean, like they've been, you know, right at the top of the standings for a couple of years in a row now, but I kind of hadn't really thought about them too much. And I just took a look a little while ago when I saw somebody tweeting about this. And, you know, right now they, you know, Toronto's obviously playing really well and Tampa Bay's 6 points up on them, but their goal differential is plus 48. I mean, that's astonishing. You know, Toronto scores a ton of goals and they are they're 11 goals behind them in goal differential. I mean, like they're number one, it's not close. I mean, them and Toronto are the only ones, I'm looking real quick, they're the only ones I think that are over 28. And they have 48. You know, so I mean, those two teams are just blowing out teams on a regular basis. And obviously, we as Red Wings fans have unfortunately seen Toronto's firepower up close recently. But yeah, I mean, I just, again, it's hard as a Red Wings fan because I don't want them to win. You know, I don't want them to be that good. But at the same time, as you know, somebody who tries to be at least an objective observer sometime, you know, you do have to sit back and just say, wow, that's pretty impressive. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, if they can keep up their current pace and just how many points in the standings they can earn. Jay, what are you interested in tonight around the league?
Well, it's not just about tonight. I guess the one thing that's always on my mind, just as my head hits the pillow, is what is going to be like, what will be the legacy of Connor McDavid in Edmonton? I know it's a very vague and really non kind of specific storyline because yes, the man is very good. He is very good at the game of hockey. But what's weird is for him to be in a market that is just perpetually still trying to recapture what they so gloriously screwed up. And I don't really put this on, it's obviously not really on the fans at all with Edmonton. It was really just the, you know, the success of Gretzky that just warped Pocklington and everybody around in that place. It's like, I don't know. I'm just really curious. Like, what were they seeing? What were they thinking? So all the Gretzky stuff happens and now like you get all those number one picks and now you've got, you know, your bona fide number one, you know, McJesus, all the other nicknames and stuff. But I'm constantly flabbergasted at McDavid's place in this league because it's, I don't know, like are we looking at more of an impact and more of a discussion of him being, you know, far more of a legendary player were he in a different market? I mean, like, what does McDavid look like in Nashville? What does McDavid look like in New Jersey? What does McDavid look like in San Jose? Like, it's so bizarre how him being in Edmonton kind of neutralizes his place in the league. You know, like he's very good, but he's in a place that is just so very confusing right now. You know, like everything about that team drives me insane, but you just look at McDavid and you're like, oh, well, McDavid's just supposed to make everything better, but they just continue to do everything odd, not wrong, not good, odd. So I think he's always just something that's in the back of my head. But if there's a more pressing thing, just name the Seattle team already. Come on, guys. the domain names are registered. There's a ballpark that everybody's working with. I'm sick and tired of scrolling through the NHL Reddit and seeing everybody's really funny takes on what the NHL should be, what the name should be. I think my favorite joke submission is the it says leaked name and logo for the new Seattle team, and it's called the Rain City Bitch Pigeons. and what's weird is it's not just one thing. It's been submitted multiple times, and it's on the front page of the NHL subreddit. But oh my god, like the Rain City Bitch Pigeons. I didn't know I needed to hear those collections of words in that succession to know. It's like, okay, so now everything's fair game. That
Jay, I'm going to need you to do me a favor because you do it very well. Can you set up a pregame intro of the Detroit Red Wings versus the Rain City Bitch Pigeons as Doc Emmerich for me, please?
As Doc Emmerich.
Okay. I knew that's what it was going
to be. As I'm thinking about this, okay, so is it a home game in Seattle or is it a home game in Detroit? It's got to be in Seattle, right?
Yes, Detroit's very first visit to Seattle.
Detroit's very first. Okay. So the Red Wings making their first visit to Rain City. It's not Seattle anymore. It's just Rain City.
Yes.
So the music comes up to like dun 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 dun, and it's obviously going to start with a scenic of the Space Needle because they're going to be playing in Key Arena. So it's like, on Original Six Foe heads northwest where it rains. What comes with rain? Bitching. So you can imagine how much fun it'll be to face the Bitch Pigeons. Pete, you always gave me the best thing where it's rain. Birds can't fly in the rain, so they bitch. Bitch pigeons. Next. It's like it's almost overthinking it too much, but it's like the bitch pigeons are trying to make their place here in the league, and the Red Wings are looking to show them what it's like to be an everyday successor in this league. Ed Zone. Or no, then you got to throw it to be like, Doc, I got to tell you, the Bitch Pigeons are on a roll lately. Rain City can't stop. Oh, man. I can come up with something. Put on the spot. I feel bad. I don't think I did a good enough job. Maybe by the end of the episode, we'll come up with a better one.
A brand new franchise, a statuesque franchise. You know what the pigeons do to statues.
Yeah. Because Doc always does that. Like it'll be like a staccato. It's like this.
Bitch pigeons, you know? Wing, one and the same, so but never ahead.
Exactly. Yeah.
Pigeons fly. So do wings. How do they clash? Next.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, it'll probably be something like that. Yeah, there you go.
How much laughter editing you're gonna have to do, but I apologize in advance.
Oh, it's okay. I'll leave a lot in. I as soon as you got started, I muted my mic because I knew it was gonna happen. So, all right. So, we only have one more short segment before our reader question. So, before I throw it to JJ for that, we have our positivity corner. So I'm gonna take this one first. And I am going to say that I am very positive and excited and happy about a podcast that came out today. Last week, our last for sure guest, Caitlin Dividock, and I were the first guests on C. Morley's new podcast called Backseat Bench Brawl. And Caitlin is a Penguins fan, and I am a Red Wings fan, and we got to talk about the Penguins-Detroit rivalry, mostly, obviously, with the 2008-2009 Stanley Cup Finals, the back-to-back ones. And that was a lot of fun. It was really nice because Caitlin's a very knowledgeable person. She's also a very nice person, and it was really nice to talk to somebody like that where we could, you know, talk about things from different perspectives, but have it be like a mutually respectful thing and, you know, still have it be fun. So I think that was, it was a lot of fun to do. It came out today. I think if you just search for Backseat Bench Brawl, I know I use an app called Downcast and I found it right away. So you should be able to find that. And so, yeah, it was a lot of fun, and I think it turned out really well. So I'm really excited for people to hear that. Jay, what is your positivity corner?
Well, my first question is, what is the positivity corner? I first of all, in the rundown, it said it's more like a room now. So what's our format here? So is this just positive anything? I mean,
Well, it used to be that we got to the point on WHIM Radio where, the Red Wings were so awful that we would spend the first like hour of every episode just griping and grousing and complaining. So we set aside Positivity Corner to make sure that we were spending at least a little time every episode, not driving our listeners to drink. So,
okay. Right, so is it just, does it have to be Wings related, or is it just any great thing that to talk about? This is, I feel so unprepared. I should have asked this before we hit record.
Anything, just remind us that life is beautiful.
Remind us that life is beautiful. Okay, well, I will say this. So as the person on this current episode, who has had the most opportunities to listen to them. I will make this positivity corner about the noise level at the new arena is getting so much more fun and engaging, and I think the Wings are home next for New Year's Eve. Is that something that makes sense? Because they're in Pittsburgh, and then. Maybe they're home for two games beforehand. I forget. Anyways, for those of you listening out there, yes, the current state of the team could lead you to believe that the in-arena atmosphere is dull, lacking. Not the case. Last few times we've been there, even though it's been some competitive losses, which honestly, that's what I wanted out of this team this year. Just be competitive. You know, if we lost every single game this year by one goal, I think that'd be a phenomenal year, just a phenomenal year, given the way the team's current makeup. I just think that'd be phenomenal. But even when the team has kind of done some stinkers, the crowd has always has consistently gotten better. And that's, I don't know, there's for an arena that was that is currently in its kind of own class right now in terms of its construction and layout. Recently, Mr. Jeff Hancock had come to town, and I was able to secure some tickets for him. And I was telling them, and I will say this to everybody else too, if you're planning a trip to come here, I would almost more recommend make sure you're here so that you can go to two home games in one trip, because the first game, you're just going to be trying to figure out where you are, what's in the building, where to do, where to go, what to do. Just, it's overwhelming. And then it's that second game that you're really actually able to just kind of sit and watch. And I think a lot of people are finally getting around to doing that second or third visit to the arena where they can just watch the game. And they're starting to, you know, embrace the team a little bit more, and that. So I don't, Pete, I guess maybe I can at a later date record on my phone, and then you could drop that as an audio drop in a future episode or something. But yeah, I think that there's that's the one positive thing that I've seen that actually gives me more hope, because, you know, as much as the team can stink, If they're still able to get people out of their seats to cheer on them when they can get stuff right, or when they're putting the effort in, I think that's something that we can all mostly agree on right now. I don't really think anybody's not putting in an effort per se. Like they can stink. Like you can just not be good at something. But like if you're just putting in the effort to just try and get better at it, or if you're given that opportunity and you kind of stumble a bit, but then you go back out there and try a little bit better, that's obviously greater than doing anything that Jonathan Erickson's done in the last 6 years. So I'm emboldened what's another, Pete, you can do an audio drop of just another buzzword right there. I don't know, but I feel really good about the way that the LCA is starting to sound, because it's starting to sound like a home barn, and you know, this team isn't very good right now. So if it's starting to sound like a home barn when we're not being very competitive or being very noticeable to anybody, I am already getting chills about just how loud that place is going to be when not only when Steve Eisenman returns as GM, but also when they are actually amazing and competitive and awesome and, you know, actually making the playoffs consistently and doing stuff. So that was my ghost of good Christmas future, not ghost of scratching off the Scrooged headstone. So there you go.
Cool. All right, JJ, what do you got?
All right, Jay, I'll give you the word mollified.
Mollified, yes. Okay, I'm writing
good,
it down.
Good word doesn't get used often enough.
Okay.
And I'll kind of build off of your point. It's not just in the arena. Like the Red Wings are more fun to watch this season, but the Red Wings fans online have been a lot better this year too, in terms of like, because I'll tell you, running the WHIM Twitter account, every time in previous seasons things would go bad and like just the wave of emotion as people, because every individual person is venting their own feelings, so it can get hard sometimes to remember that everybody is special and unique, and they're all their feelings are special and unique to them and super important to them. And then when you get 30 of them all sharing the same shit at the same account, it can get kind of drag on you, especially when a lot of them are complaining about like you being happy that the Red Wings scored or won a game. There's been significantly less of that this season. A lot more go with the flow attitude, a lot more, although it is possible that I've just literally muted everybody who's been guilty of bringing me down in the past. So that may be it too. But no, I think that the general feeling among the Red Wings fan base is coming up and happy. And it is a lot more fun not only to watch the team, but also to be a part of Red Wings fandom. The online presence. Like, I haven't gotten to a game this season. I had to get to a couple of games previously. I've been to the LCA, and I do agree. Like, the first time you're there, it is very much I'm not used to this experience. And the second time, it's super comfortable. And the crowd has come through on the broadcast a lot it sounds like they're having fun in that arena too. So, yeah, I'm really enjoying that out of Red Wings fandom this year.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm very excited to get to go see a game. I don't know exactly when, but hopefully in the relatively near future. All right, so we are going to wrap up this episode with our last segment. This is reader questions, and it's going to be a little shorter than usual. We are recording this the day after Christmas on Boxing Day. People are probably, you know, still celebrating with their family. So we don't have a lot of questions, but we do have some good ones. So as always, I will turn it over to JJ to take this part of the show.
Yeah, we got the Joe Hicketts of mailbags. It's it's short, but packs a punch.
Yeah.
So starting off, we got Mike Lawn, who asks, what is your Red Wings New Year's resolution? Personally, I'm hereby going to run 5 miles every time the Red Wings lose in regulation. Either I'm happy or in great shape. And then in parentheses, I'd rather be happy. And then he says, Happy New Year's in both English and Swedish. I'm not going to disrespect the Swedish language by trying to pronounce exactly how you say that, so you can just go to the website and read it for yourself. But the actual question itself, your Red Wings New Year's resolution, I will throw it to Jay first.
My Red Wings New Year's resolution, I think, I don't know, I was thinking about this earlier today, and the one thing I'd like to do a better job of with this team is to stop holding them to the past. I think with this current team, it's unfair to have 2008, 2002, or any of the other fantastic years as some sort of always like, why can't you be more like them? You know, kind of like the way the father does to that. He's like, why can't you be more like your older brother? He's got his shit together and he did things and you're just coasting by on the coattails. You're not even earning your keep around here. But if there's anything that these both hockey and political climates have taught me, it's that people fighting are fighting battles that you don't have any idea about, and it's best to have empathy. So my New Year's resolution with the Red Wings is to let them be themselves. I don't want them to be 2008. I don't want them to be even 2006 when they were setting ridiculous records for the post salary cap era. I want them to just be the Red Wings. So I'm going to give them that chance. I mean, I get to still criticize the things that I love. That's still something we all get to like to remind everybody of. But I think I'm just going to unshackle myself from this weird fascination with trying to make them be better according to past teams and just let them find their own way. Is that too deep? I think I went too
deep. No, I like it. Yeah.
It's basically like I don't want to be as mad anymore. So like maybe that's just the simplest version of what I said.
I like that. What do you got, Pete?
Yeah, I mean I honestly think I might have said something similar last year to what I'm about to say, but that's okay. Because I mean like the whole point of New Year's resolutions is that like you don't do them, right? So it would make perfect sense if I had the same one as last year. So it definitely hasn't happened nearly as much as it did last year. But you know, there's been games where I have basically just mentally checked out because just either the team is just getting so outplayed and like there doesn't seem to be anything to find, you know, joy in. And you know, it's sometimes it could be hard to, you know, to maintain the same level of, you know, observing as you probably should. So I think that's the biggest one for me is to try to find a way to make that not happen. And I know one thing that's been helpful in the past has been to focus on, you know, either just one player or focus on maybe a couple players and just try to watch them and see what's going on there. So maybe I can get a little bit of analysis in or something like that. But yeah, like I said, it's not as bad as last year. Last year, there was definitely like the end of the season was really hard to get excited about watching a game. Definitely been a lot better this year, but yeah, there's definitely been some games where I think I've just mentally checked out and I don't want to do that. So, I'm going to make an effort to not do that.
Excellent. Yeah. Mine is kind of a Frankenstein of both of yours, and it's kind of a continuation of previous resolutions of, you know, kind of what Pete said in terms of I'm going to keep finding the fun in watching the Red Wings. Like it, I had come to the realization that there were times where it was just a drag to watch the team. Like they were just not a fun team to watch. And it felt like work watching them. And I either have to stop watching them or I have to change the way I'm watching them. And I think I've done a pretty good job of every game, even if they're playing like ass, there are ways that I'm finding to enjoy it. And also, like Jay said, in terms of like not being as mad, yeah, I've resolved, and I'm basically re-upping that resolution to not let the Red Wings ruin my mood for more than an hour after a game is over. There were times where like those two kind of concepts played into one another, like, you know, in an effort to not let the Red Wings ruin my mood for too long after a really bad performance, I would check out. Like I just don't care about the Red Wings, and that wasn't fun either. So I'm going to really embrace that hour of anger when I get it, and then I'm just going to let it go. You know, it's all about finding that balance. So I do really love the running 5 miles every time they lose in regulation, but I also don't want to like lose out on getting runs in if the Red Wings play too well, because then it's like, oh, it's the Red Wings' fault I got fat. I can't handle that. So maybe I'll just, every time I end up running any kind of distance, I'll be like, ah, I'm banking for future losses. And yeah. I could do that.
There you go.
Smart, smart.
All right, so moving on. Datsu for Prime Overlord has question number two. And this one is tough, a little tricky. What is your favorite Christmas present you've ever gotten? And I feel like we may need to split this into childhood versus adulthood, because I don't think that it's possible to have a favorite present in adulthood that can come close to like the one present that you can remember that like sets your expectations for all Christmases going forward. Like, there's no way to recapture that childhood joy as an adult. So if you want to split it to childhood and adulthood, you can. If you just got one that you can think of, go ahead. I'm not your supervisor. and in this one, I'll throw Pete first.
Okay. Yeah. I was trying to think of an adult one, and like it sounds bad when I say this, but like I can't think of any like adult Christmas present that was just like over the top unbelievable. Obviously, there's been a lot of really good ones, but there's not one in particular that sticks out. So I'm just gonna go with a kid one. My memory for time is very poor. But when I was relatively young, I was a big fan of the cartoon television program He-Man, Masters of the Universe, and one year I got a toy Castle Grayskull, and I remember that it had a working trapdoor, which at the time was the coolest thing ever, and I just remember running downstairs, and I was still young enough that it was like you wait up all night and then you finally fall asleep and then you get up and you sprint downstairs and start tearing things open, and I just remember opening that and just loving it. So for me, that's kind of an easy choice. I think that one definitely sticks out for me.
Right on, Jay.
Trapdoor Castle Grayskull.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's pretty big. That's a pretty big deal. Did it come with figures, or like, did you already have those?
I think I already had them.
Okay. So that's smart.
Yeah.
Cause that's probably a smart parenting strategy, right? Like, you kind of just like kind of a buildup where it's like, wow, you have all these figures. Where are you going to put them? What are you going to do with them? Look under the tree, son. There it is.
Yeah.
The House of Pain, Castle Grayskull. Okay, well, I'm going to take advantage of the adult and the children stipulation that JJ has put forth. So, as a child, my favorite gift was, and at the time, this was when I really started to get into the movie itself. So this was about, 95, 96, it was between 95 and the year 2000, but I was living in Chicago until Christmas 97. So the way that my family makeup was, since both of my parents' families were in Michigan, winter break would let out and then we would just drive here and just stay with my grandma for all of the Christmas festivities. So it was strange because in terms of present payout, at that time it was got most of our stuff at my dad's side and then just kind of like, decently good stuff on my mom's side, but since that format has been completely blown up because I have a wife now, my brother has a house now. There's just everything is it's just a mess. But when things were simpler, I went down to my grandma's living room and I opened up, and at the time, because it was the pinnacle of gaming for myself, because everybody else was playing Nintendo, I was playing Sega. My parents actually got me the Ghostbusters Sega Genesis game. Now, I don't know if anybody remembers this. Spoiler alert, that's a joke. Everybody remembers this. Early video games were ruthless. They only had two speeds. Breathtakingly easy or life-threatening hard. And I remember renting the Batman Forever game multiple times just trying to beat the first effing level, and I could never do it. And then I remember watching, this was a couple years ago, because the beauty of the internet is that people will now just record themselves playing these old games, that there was this you had to stand in a certain spot and do a certain button combination to shoot the bat rope up to move on to the next level. There's no context clues. There's nothing in the book. The game was just shoving life down your throat. You're like, listen, whatever, you have to figure it out, man. It's like, no, I don't have to figure this out. I'm 12. You're supposed to make this easy. But the Ghostbusters game was great because it's disgusting, because it's almost like it's this cartoon level thing, because you're basically playing like, imagine like Pidgey level, like miniature versions of Egon, Ray, and Bill and Venkman. Strangely enough, no Zedmore, which it's 2018, folks. Let's get Winston in these games now, huh? But the graphics made all of the ghosts look gnarly. Like, they were actually scary. Like, I was scared to play the damn game. There's a point in the game where you actually have to fight a shadow version of yourself. So there's a shadow green Venkman that you have to fight. And that's weird and odd and off-putting. So that was really cool. The 8-bit version of the Ghostbusters song is just as good as the Ray Parker Jr. version, just in case anybody was wondering. And then I will say, and I'm glad you asked this question at this particular moment, because this year I received my favorite adult gift. And everybody's going to laugh at this, but the reason I say it's adult gift, because it means I'm an adult now. Do you know why?
Why?
Because my wife gave me the complete Columbo. I have never been, I have never been more excited about anything in my life as a now adult present recipient. That is my Ready Player One Extra Life coin that I didn't know I needed. It's nice. And what's nice is it's DVD, which means it's going to look like crap, just as it was originally broadcast. I'm so excited about this because, first of all, I've been perfecting my Columbo impression because I watch Maurice LaMarche. For those of you in the know, Maurice LaMarche does the voice of Brain, of Pinky and the Brain. Also does Morbo on Futurama. He's an amazing guy, but his Columbo is amazing, and it kills me every time. So I'm really excited about this because this not only sates my old person itch, not to be confused with all the other old person itches that you get over your life. It's different for everybody, kids. It'll happen to me. It's happened to me, and it'll happen to you. Just like Grandpa Simpson. I used to be with it, but then they changed what it was. Now whatever it is scares and terrifies me. It happened to me. It'll happen to you. So, I now am excited that I get to figure out the correct way of reenacting Columbo, nice. Which coming soon, I'm going to be drawing, and this is all my wife's idea. We watched like the first 6 episodes of Columbo, and we came up with this great idea. It's a comic strip about Columbo doing his, one more thing. But it's in the most awkward and unexpected places that he does it. So he finishes his questioning, and the perp closes the door like, phew, I finally beat him. Like, goes in their room and like goes to like open their drawer to like put on some pajamas, and Columbo is inside of the drawer smoking a cigar. He's like, one more thing. So like, he's in a suitcase, he's in a blender, he's in a cupboard. We're just currently brainstorming all the places that Columbo's going to pop out. So
cool. That's
all I got. Yeah. That's it. I'm literally going to put on Columbo after we're done recording this. I'm so excited.
And watching in the terrible DVD up formatting, by the end of watching the series, you will actually look just like Peter Falk did. It'll be perfect.
It's true.
All the squinting.
Guy and all.
Yeah.
Great.
I'll go ahead and date myself and say that my favorite childhood gift was the original NES system package with Super Mario Brothers / Duck Hunt.
Yep.
That was so perfect because my parents had spent the entire year saying, you are never getting a Nintendo, you don't need a Nintendo, shut up about Nintendo, and then that's what we got, and it was just, that was basically the... the year that I remember it was Magic is real. We got the Nintendo. And then as an adult, my sister surprised me with Winter Classic 2009 tickets and a trip to Chicago for that game. And it was like, it was such a big, because that since then our family hasn't really like done well with keeping secrets and surprises. So they went through a lot of work to keep me from not only spoiling it by buying myself tickets, but to keep the secret away from me. So when I opened that up, like it was like, it really took me aback. Like I was not expecting it. And it was such a great present and then such a fun experience. Especially sitting in front of the guys who like, they were like super mad at Brett Lebda for being basically from Chicago and not playing for the Blackhawks. And then he scored a goal against them. And that was, I almost wanted to turn around and like, ah, what now, fuckers. But I had already used up my shouting at strangers earlier in the day when Gary Bettman came within 30 yards of me and I shouted, "You suck," at him, and he looked straight at me.
Oh no.
And it was great because he,
perfect. Oh,
yeah.
God.
Like I thought like he was going to like try to have me thrown out or something just cause that like, but yeah, it was just one of those like, ouch, that kind of hurt looks. And it's like, ah, gotcha.
Yeah.
So you can feel things.
Yeah. It kept me warm on that cold Chicago day. Plus the Red Wings tore the Blackhawks. I knew one in the game. So that was fun as well.
JJ, you reminded me of my favorite thing because I was also at that game. And my favorite part of that game was at the beginning when they had everybody hold up their placards to do the big, like everybody was holding it to show like the helicopter, like, you know, with the Winter Classic Blackhawks versus Red Wings. And so I was third baseline, like in the corner, tiny bit of an obstructed view with one of the stanchions. And it was really funny because so the upper deck said Red Wings versus, and then the lower bowl was Blackhawks. And I guess the upper deck was heavily Blackhawk fans because they all figured out that they were holding up Red Wings. They weren't holding up Blackhawks. And just I just remember the announcer guy's like, "All right, everybody, hold up your placards for NBC as we have a special message for all those viewing at home." So they flip it over once to say it's the Winter Classic on NBC. And then they say, "All right, now flip to the other side." And they flip the other one. There's this like casual delay of people like, "Wait a minute, what?" And then just this resounding booze started happening. And then the rain of all the torn up placards from the upper deck to the lower deck. It was already snowing, but now it was snowing, ripped to shreds, mass produced cardboard cutouts. Cause everybody was so pissed that they were even just holding up something that as a whole represents anything Red Wings forced them to throw it. They had to throw it away. They had to get it away from them. So, That's an image that'll stick with me for forever and ever and ever.
That was great.
They are such babies. Yeah. Sorry to bore you.
I'm exhausted.
Well, that is the end of that segment. So I'll go ahead and.
Oh my god!
No, I know. Like all kidding aside, I'm exhausted. I had nothing to do with you. So, all right. So, we're gonna wrap this up with by gazing into our crystal ball and trying to figure out or predict what is going to happen for the Red Wings coming up. So, let's see. If we look at the next 2 weeks, we have. And Jay, just as a heads up, so basically I'm gonna go through the next few games,
sure.
and I'm gonna ask you what are your predictions for the number of points that the Red Wings are gonna earn in the standing. So you don't have to go, you know, game by. I mean, you could, but you don't have to go game by game. Sure. So,
okay.
All right. So we have on the 27th we have at Pittsburgh. Then we have on Saturday at Dallas. We are home against Florida, and then we go into January, and we have. Home against Calgary, home against Nashville, home against Washington, and home against Montreal. All right, so that's four, five, six, seven games in the next 2 weeks. So, JJ, what do you What's your prediction for the number of points that the Red Wings are going to earn?
So that's 14 possible points. I'm going to take the mathematically easy one and just say they're going to earn 7. But I will go out on a limb and I will say, I will guarantee that 2 of those happen this Saturday in Dallas.
Okay, cool. Ooh. What are you thinking, Jay?
Well, I actually am glad that we were talking about this, because as I was gazing over the schedule as well, I did notice, and I don't know if this is something you guys have already talked about this season, but did you know that some of those games are actually on an ESPN channel?
Yes.
Thursday's game will be on ESPN Plus. This is news to me. This is interesting. So that means they'll be on a mostly national audience, which means their odds of points severely drops. Yes. let's go to January real quick. Of those 7 games, one of those is on ESPN Plus, which is the Thursday game against Penguins. So I think we're going to totally lose that game, which means I think our maximum point, because after that, we are in Dallas and then we're home the rest of the way for those games. So good crowds. I'm going to be positive, and I'm going to say they're going to get 8 points.
8 points.
They're going to get 8 points.
All right. Well, I'm going to be a little more negative and say 5 total points.
5 total.
As always, okay. I hope I'm wrong. as always, when I predict a lower number of points. All right. So thanks to everybody for listening. We hope that you enjoy, enjoyed Christmas if you celebrate. If not, we hope that you enjoy your holiday season. And tonight, as you listen to this, we're playing the Penguins. So, obviously, Jay pointed out a reason that there might be a little cause for alarm in terms of winning this game, but we'll have to see. So thanks again for listening. We hope you enjoy, like I said, enjoy the rest of your holiday season, New Year's, and all that. And we will be back at you soon.